In the great halls of USA Today, we assemble the newsroom's mightiest nerds. Brett Molina.
I'm so sorry for the producer of this podcast.
Kelly Lawler.
I will fight you on it.
Brian Truitt.
Spoiler town!
Together, they form the Mothership. Their mission? To harness their collective encyclopedic knowledge of nerdiness in all its forms. To dissect every trailer, plot twist, and game released for the geekiest of fans. The Mothership, saving the universe from bad comic book adaptations every Friday.
All aboard the Mothership, the Geek Culture Podcast from the USA Today Network. Thanks so much for joining us, and happy Friday, everyone. We're light on crew this week, so it's just me. But here we go. I'm Brett Molina. I play video games. My favorite video game memory for the holidays is opening up The Legend of Zelda on the Nintendo Entertainment System on Christmas morning. There may or may not be a picture of me holding it up like I drew Excalibur from a stone or something. So it's pretty awesome. If this is your first time listening, welcome. New episodes of The Mothership drop every Friday, and you can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you like to listen. And while you're on Apple Podcasts, it would be really awesome if you could write a quick review about the show, because not only do you help other fans who love nerdy pop culture find us, as a thank you, we will give you a very special shout out on our next episode. So try it out. It's all upside for you. It's great. Don't forget, along with leaving a review, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Mothership Pod. You can send us an email to mothershippod@usatoday.com. Also, shout out to Brian and Kelly. Brian is out on vacation this week. Kelly is sick. Can't wait to see you guys again next week. Let's get to the main topic. It is the holiday season. It is a very big season if you love video games. Black Friday just concluded. Cyber Monday wrapped up. We've still got about, a month or so before Christmas and the holidays. This is a very big time for video games because this is when all the publishers release their stuff. This is when a lot of them make most of their money. And because of all the deals out there, this is when a lot of people will buy their video games and their consoles. Joining us to talk about this is Mike Snyder, who covers tech here at USA Today. And once upon a time, we worked on a blog together on video games. It was, felt like forever ago.
It did feel like forever ago. Thanks for letting me stow away on the Mothership with you, Brett.
Yeah, he snuck on, so we figured we might as well have him on as a guest one. So let's go big picture, because obviously this is a very big time for people who play games and people who make them. What's your sense kind of on the lay of the land this year? Is there anything, anything notable that sticks out? Is this kind of another holiday? What's going on?
Well, I've covered this industry for more than 20 years, and technically right now I'm not covering it as a beat, but I'm diving in and out, kind of like a paratrooper once in a while as we try to figure out how much we're going to cover games here at USA Today, the platform. And there's been many times over the years where we kind of thought there was a renaissance in gaming, and, whether it was through, breakthroughs in graphics, the online components becoming robust. And, you and I were talking about a story we're going to work on later this year about kind of the, a buyer's guide and a setting for the industry and what we thought. And I mentioned the idea of peak gaming. And, we've talked about peak TV the last year or so just because of all the content you can get on Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and all these other streaming services. And it feels like we're at a peak gaming time in the video game industry for many different reasons. There's so many online multiplayer games that are coming across and bringing new people in. But then you also have these gigantic single-player story games that are just mammoth. And I can't take credit alone for this peak gaming terminology, because about the time we talked about this, I think it was a couple weeks ago, right after that, I saw an Entertainment Weekly story where they mentioned peak gaming when they were writing about Red Dead Redemption 2. But I think what's happening now is that it really is a time where there's so many ways to get people interested in gaming, from mobile to, these free online massive games to these big budget $60, blockbuster games like Red Dead Redemption and some of the other games we're going to talk about. That's what I think is happening right now. And all the barometers, global and U.S. spending, we expect to see record spending this year. And that is projected to continue over the next couple of years just because of the installed base and the interest that consumers have right now.
The other reason this is kind of interesting year two, it seems, is because of Fortnite, because this is the first year where we've had Fortnite as a mammoth. Like, it came out last fall, but it was sort of on its way up last holiday. Now it's like way above and beyond everything. I think I read something recently where it's up to 200 million players now, reportedly. So it's obviously not slowing down, and clearly, and it's free, which has been a big reason why people have latched on. But it's still so popular and people still love it. How does Fortnite figure into all this? Do people seem satisfied just playing Fortnite and not really wanting to buy stuff, or is this a supplement thing?
Well, I don't know that I have the answer to that, but I can give you some thoughts. First of all, that's not the game I'm going to be an entry point for. As I've lamented for many years when we're on the Game Hunters blog and website and audio and whatever we'd be doing and video and when we go to E3 and everything, I'm not the greatest multiplayer player. I mean, compared to someone you'd pick off the street, I'm probably better than them. But compared to like you and my other colleagues that would cover the game industry, I'm not very good. But I think what the companies that make games like Fortnite hope that that's kind of like an entry level to get you into more games. I mean, you can spend money in Fortnite, but they also kind of want you, well, you get tired of Fortnite, let's try something else, and you maybe plunk down $40 for a downloadable game on a PS4 or an Xbox One, or you get a Switch and you start buying Nintendo games. I think they look at it as a gateway. The industry can't survive on free games. I mean, those Fortnite cost, I don't know, hundreds of millions to make and to maintain and keep giving new content to. So they can't survive that way. But they just kind of hope that gets people used to having a controller in their hand or using their phone or whatever they're going to use, and they want something new, just like watching TV. You know, you binge a series, and then you want to see what are you going to watch next?
You mentioned this earlier, too. There's the push to going online, and we've seen, especially this year, it feels like a lot more of the tentpole properties are pushing online only now, which gets interesting because then you get to this idea of your experiences aren't finite anymore. Everything is just kind of never ending. But then it also feels like you only have so much time. There's kind of a gamble that you're taking depending on the game you pick. And sometimes if with a movie or a TV show, it may cost you $10 or it's on Netflix and you just skip it. But like with a video game, depending on what it is, it's $60. And then it's like, if it doesn't work and you bought it digitally, you're kind of hosed. So, I mean, how does that contribute to like decision making and kind of the landscape?
There's a constant battle for entertainment time. So there's multiple things happening here. What do you choose to get? For instance, if you bought Red Dead Redemption, I've only played 10 hours of that. I think we're going to talk a bit about what I think about that game. But I've only played 10 hours. I think roughly they say is about 60 hours. And then today, you know, or starting now, they're going to have a Red Dead Online, which could last forever. You know, so if you choose Red Dead Redemption 2, are you going to buy anything else? Because that could be your whole entertainment time, you know, for months to come. Then I think you are probably going to talk about what happens if you make a purchase that doesn't work out of the gate, or it works out of the gate and then you get a bug or something, because these are giant, massive software packages. You know, it took me 50 minutes to download Assassin's Creed Odyssey to try that. So, you know, you've got a couple things happening. Some of them are you get to make the choice on your own. You say, I'm going to put my money down on Spider-Man or whatever, and I'm going to invest in that, and I won't buy anything until I'm done with that. Or you get something and something goes awry in your time and money. You got to figure out, what can I do next? Can I afford to go get something else, or do I got to wait for the software company or the developer to fix it?
Yeah, it's such a weird time. I feel like even like 5 years ago, it's totally different from now. I mean, so much has changed with that.
Yeah,
going online.
5 years ago, you put the disc in and it played. You know, it would load as you were playing. Now you kind of like put the disc in and you go walk and make dinner and come back, and then it might be ready to play. I'm not saying it's a good or a bad thing. I mean, once you get going, you know, you're in these great environments and it's incredible, but it is a different beast, a different time.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's talk Red Dead Redemption 2. That's one of the games on the list that we wanted to talk about. You've played it for a while. Before we dig into the experience playing it, set it up a little bit. The last game, I think, was in 2010. So it's been a long time since we've been back in this environment. What exactly is going on?
So this is a prequel, and don't let that scare you, because you don't really need to have played the previous game called Red Dead Redemption. But this goes back in time, and it's the story of a gang that's kind of, you're seeing civilization kind of, you know, crimp their style, and they're having issues about the leadership of the gang. It's a very multidimensional story, and you play as one character, as a member of the gang, and you kind of have to, along the way, figure out what you're going to do. And I haven't got far enough to know what my guy is going to do, you know, along the way. But you're going to make some decisions, and you'll be bumping up against history, and which is cool. I always love when you get a chance to put yourself in a turn of the century. It's the 19th century. It's the Old West is beginning to meet kind of like the Deadwoods of the world. Deadwoods getting civilized. I mean, it's not set in Deadwood, but that, if you've watched that show, you can kind of get the idea. And you're a gang trying to survive, build up your worth. At the same time, you're being hunted by other gangs because of some past things you've done. And it basically takes you all over, you know, kind of the west of the Mississippi and into the New Orleans, you know, what would be New Orleans area. It's a mammoth game. And then eventually, you know, one of those gang members becomes the star of what was the game from 2010, Red Dead Redemption. So you could go back and play that game afterwards, or you already know what's going to happen. I played Red Dead Redemption, but never finished it. I mean, it was a mammoth game too.
Yeah.
So that's where it's set up. So you get to travel, you know, you get to ride on horseback, you get to travel by trains, stagecoaches, you can rob, you can hunt, you can do all kinds of things. It's crazy.
So what's the coolest thing you did so far?
What's the coolest? Well, there's a, now this is kind of a staged situation, but I don't think it turns out the same way every time, but you kind of real quickly had to go scramble your plans to hijack a train, and you don't have all the components you thought you're going to have, but you still got to do it because the boss says to do it, and you figure out how to do it. That was pretty cool. Hijacking a train was cool. The stupidest thing I did, which I think I've actually seen other people online said this too after I wrote my first impression story back in October, is until you get used to the controller buttons, you actually could screw up, and I punched my horse. You know, so then immediately the horse reacted and booted me, you know, with his hind legs, booted me across the where we were outside somewhere, and he ran away. I'm like, oh my gosh, I've invested all this time in this horse, and now he's gone. Thankfully, the horse waited a while, and he stood, and I walked over to him, gave him a carrot, and kissed and made up. So, but that was pretty funny.
I feel like that's why all the Rockstar games, and they make Grand Theft Auto too. I feel like that's why those games are so much fun, is because, yeah, there's like the main stuff and you do cool stuff, like you rob a stagecoach, or like Grand Theft Auto, the last one, you could like do jewelry heists and all this other stuff. But there was like the mundane stuff, or like the accidentally funny stuff, where it was kind of like you might accidentally, a pedestrian might punch you or something out of the blue, or like in your case, the horse kicks you back like 10 feet. But I've always thought that was the most entertaining part of a Rockstar game.
They
the
leave room
stuff.
For serendipity.
Exactly.
It's very cool, you know.
Absolutely. What can you tell us about the online stuff? Because, you know, I know they did something similar with Grand Theft Auto, and it seems like it'd be similar here. But what exactly are they planning?
Well, they started letting people in Tuesday, so I haven't been in there. But it sounds like they're going to let you create your own, like, posse and go do, you know, robberies or stagecoach heists or
I would guess the reverse,
like
you could be a sheriff, too, if you wanted.
Or I don't know if you could actually be a sheriff. That'd be interesting. But you could probably be, you know, a group of bounty hunters, you know, working for a sheriff and making money that way. But this is what I think they're trying to do is like they did with Grand Theft Auto Online. And I think you might have played some Grand Theft Auto Online.
A little bit.
I haven't played it. I wrote about it a couple times when it was in the planning stages. But that's been going on for 5 years. So, you know, Grand Theft Auto 5 came out in 2013, I guess. They're looking to do the same thing with Red Dead Online, you know, and I've talked to some analysts about this. They don't know that it'll be as successful as Grand Theft Auto because not as many people are interested in the West, you know, as are in, you know, modern day crime stuff. But, you know, they could still easily make, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars selling stuff in the games. as you upgrade, you know, your horse or your hat or your chaps or whatever, you know. So it's really interesting where games are going right now and what Rockstar is trying to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's get to the game I've been playing, because I'm kind of, I'm so disappointed playing it so far. It's really bumming me out. So I've been playing Fallout 76 for a little bit. For those of you that don't know, this is from Bethesda. And I love it. It's a, you know, the whole premise of the game is there's a nuclear explosion, basically. There's, you know, you're in this kind of post-nuclear apocalypse. With Fallout 3, you started out in a vault, which was sort of this kind of 50s era utopia. Something weird happens. You have to get out of the vault. And then you realize the vault opens up to this world where it's just everything's irradiated. There are giant roaches running around. It's like crazy. But it's really fascinating because there are all these cool people. Like one of the first people you meet, I think, was a sheriff in this one kind of makeshift town and stuff. So it's cool. I mean, it's a fun universe. All those games were good. So Fallout 76 stays in line with that. You come out of this vault and you have to recolonize. I'm just going to talk about the experience that has turned my thoughts as they have been. You take on all these different missions. There's this overseer of the vault. The overseer has this kind of mission in mind that you're kind of overtaking when you come out. So you're kind of going on that path. There is a side thing where I have the option to have a dropship come in and bring me this awesome crate of stuff. You're a survivalist, so you're basically collecting anything you can find. So you find a tin can, you find a coffee cup, you find all this stuff. And so with Fallout, the way it works is you collect all this junk and then you scrap it and then you can use it to build weapons and ammo and armor and all this stuff. So everything you collect is really important. Obviously, getting a crate of stuff is awesome. You just need stuff. Like you just need to, you become a hoarder. It's a hoarder's dream, basically, playing this game. So I do the mission to go to this tower, I activate it, I call on the dropship. Dropship comes down. I'm near this like weird outdoor motel that's right near where I come out of the vault. I have to go to a spot on the map. So I'm walking to the map, go to the spot. The ship comes down, it hits a building and it starts kind of thrashing around. It almost reminded me of when you see a moth that gets inside a lamp. You know what I'm talking about? Where it's like kind of flapping around and like just looks.
This doesn't sound like it's going to turn out good.
No. Well, yeah. And I'm like, okay, this is weird. The ship finishes thrashing around and goes up, drops the crate. Here's the problem, though. The crate is put on a building that I have no way to get to. I tried sprinting and jumping on the building. I walked around several times. I was like, where can I, you know? And I had to look online because I'm like, this is crazy. And other people had the same problem where like the crate was getting dropped in a spot where no one could get it. And there was one person I thought I saw who said they had to find two other people to like climb on their shoulders and get to the top. And I'm like, well, how's that going to work? Like, I just don't like, can I just get the crate without all this extra stuff? So that happened. And then later on in the game, I'm playing and I get to a key point. I have to get to an airport and I get to the airport and I stop for a second. It's like, I'm going to take a break. So I shut down, come back the next day. All the main quests that I had weren't there anymore. And I'm like, okay, I'll give it a couple minutes. Maybe they'll come back. They weren't coming back. I say, okay, I'm going to go try trigger it. Maybe if I find something, it'll trigger the quest again and everything comes back. I do that. Nothing happens. I go to a terminal and I'm fighting all these like zombie guys and stuff like that. And the game freezes and it kicks me out. And I'm like, that's it. I had to start over because it kept doing all this crazy stuff. And it's, I just like, now I don't want to play it anymore.
That's too bad.
And it's bumming me out. But, you know, and I looked online and other people were having a lot of the same problems. And it's just like, it's really frustrating to see this kind of stuff. There was one bug where someone on Reddit, I think, wrote about this. Their character basically became immortal and couldn't get killed. Their health would be at zero and nothing happened, which is kind of, I guess, in a way, is cool.
Like a god mode or something?
Pretty much. But then I think there are certain perks that you can have, but you need to have your health bar up to use them, and now you can't. So it's like, part of me wonders if the big change with Fallout 76 this year is it's all online. So instead of meeting characters throughout traveling, it's other players, which is kind of cool, I guess, because then it's like you can team up with other players. But then you're also introducing stuff that anyone who's played a video game knows about, which is people that will just grief you because they want to, because they're just trying to mess your game up and stuff like that. They're just, I get that they're trying to be very trusting of the players, but I also feel like you're setting it up to like make it an awful experience for people too, depending on how it all goes.
All I know is, you know, Bethesda is very, they have such a great vision for what they want to do on in these games. And unfortunately, it sounds like maybe this one wasn't quite ready, or that it was too...
Maybe ambitious? Yeah, I don't know.
Ambitious. Yeah. Maybe it was too ambitious, or maybe it just takes a month of, you know, of real gameplay with the real world players in there before it gets fine-tuned.
But I think Fallout also hints at a bigger issue I've had with games sometimes, especially over the last couple of years as we go online, which is, I think now it's almost like you're expected to buy this game and then there's going to be a patch on the first day because something's broken, or something breaks early on and then they fix it later. And it's like, can you just get something out of the box that doesn't have this stuff? Can I just put, you know, that's why I like the games like a Spider-Man, for example. I put the game in the console and I play it and it's great. And I'm not stressed out about something's going to break and I have to wait for a patch or something. Yeah. And I feel like when you go online, you're going to introduce a lot of this stuff. And I get why they went online, but I'm part of me is wondering if that was the way to go here. The other thing that's interesting is I saw a reporter share this. Apparently last year, Bethesda had some big screed about how single player was so valuable and so important. You know, being online is great, but you know, these single player games are just as valuable, and their big game is a multiplayer game online. It's like, okay. So I don't know. I really wanted to like this game. It's really bumming me out that I don't. And I think we let Bethesda get away with some of the bugs in their games because it didn't totally ruin the experience, and this ruined the experience. And I feel like it's ruining it for a lot of other people too, which is a bummer.
So what do you do now? Have you picked a new game to play? Are you waiting for the shine to come back, or what's your thoughts?
See, this is the other thing too, because there's so many layers to a lot of these online games. I remember I used to review games a lot here, and I'm almost thankful I don't now, because it's so fluid, because the games online, what you're playing now is different from 6 months from now. I remember reviewing the first Destiny, and that was online. And I didn't like it because I was like, there's nothing to do, or you hit a certain peak and there's nothing happening. It's just kind of boring. But then 6-7 months later, they actually added stuff and it was a lot better. So as a player, it's kind of great because at least the game you bought is improving. But, you know, when you're reviewing it, you got to go with what you get out of the box. That's right. All. But also it's just this, should players have to wait 3, 4, 5 months for the game to get better? Can it be better right away? Instead of like hoping that they fix it, like that just seems kind of weird. You know, I'm trying to not have any sympathy for the people who make games, but at the same time, like I'd much rather hear the game that says we're delaying 4 months and then it's complete from the beginning than rush it out and then catch up.
Right.
I feel like it's almost better. It's better the earlier way around.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's talk about something else here. another game you started, you mentioned this earlier, was Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Which I feel like now comes out every year.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the first one came out, what, a decade ago or so? I enjoyed these games because, as I mentioned earlier, they drop you into a historic time, whether it's the Renaissance or whatever. And this one, I had heard about it. Friends had said they liked it quite a bit. And so I wanted to give it a shot. I didn't get to play much. I probably got a couple hours in so far. And it drops you right in the Peloponnesian War, about the time of, you know, the movie 300 or the graphic novel 300 or whatever. And if I understood the story right, your father was a Spartan. So, so you're going to be running around in ancient Greece, and it's a beautiful setting. You're starting out on kind of an island setting. But the fighting is a little different. I don't know if we use these terms anymore, but it's kind of like real time. There's some real time strategy elements, you know, with like one hand, you get to do like your basic bumper push or whatever for an attack. But the other one, you use a bumper push and you select, you know, like one of four moves, you know, as they build up, and, you know, you might use it and one might go away. So it's a little different fighting than the previous ones were. And it also has, I haven't got far enough into the game to know if you get into like the eagle vision, you know, that you usually get, mm-hmm. where you can be above, the city or the skyline and figure out where to go. Kind of like we're going to talk about Spider-Man. Spider-Man kind of adopted that. But you have an eagle, I think it's the, it might not be, it might be a falcon. I'm sorry. A bird. Let's say you have a bird that's kind of your companion that can help scout out stuff and target things for you, which I hadn't quite mastered at this point. But it really looks like something I like to spend more time with. It's funny. The Washington Post has a regular reviews of games in their Sunday paper. And the reviewer mentioned it's a good game if you have enough time. And I think that's a issue with a lot of these games is they're so big. And it can be daunting. If you only have a half an hour, it's almost not worth booting up the game to get in because you're not going to get anything done. So,
fun fact, when you get older, you have less and less time to play games. And it's really sad sometimes.
Yeah, but it is.
What can you do?
Yeah, I mean, and I don't even have kids. I just have a wife I'd like to stay married to. You know, so it's kind of like...
Same.
But it's a beautiful game. It's that continuing story of the Templars and the Assassins, you know, that goes back to, you know, time immemorial or whatever. And it's tied to a futuristic time where we still have that battle going on. It's very interesting. And I would highly recommend that is if you got a game that isn't working and you want to try something else, you know, this is a beautiful looking game and it's definitely challenging.
Okay, one more we're going to add to the list and then we'll wrap up. So this has been out for a while, but I love it and I need to get back into it again. It's Marvel Spider-Man. It's on PlayStation 4. It's from a studio called Insomniac Games. They did one for Xbox called Sunset Overdrive, which was really good. And it actually, when I heard that they were making Spider-Man, I was more excited because the way that they do a lot of the navigating in Sunset Overdrive is pretty similar to Spider-Man, the way you can quickly bounce around. And I felt like if they had nailed it there, that getting a Spider-Man game, they would totally knock it out of the park. And they certainly did. It's really, it's so much fun. I think it's the best superhero game since Batman. Now, I mean, superhero games don't have a great track record because quite a few of them were based on movies at a point, and so they ended up being really awful. Batman kind of turned the corner a bit with all the Arkham stuff, which is awesome. But Spider-Man comes out, and it's fantastic, and it does exactly what Batman did, which is it makes you feel like the superhero, and everything just feels natural, and going across the city is beautiful, and that's really what does it.
Well, it's so fluid. I've played 4 or 5 hours of the game, and I want to keep playing some more. It's like being in a movie. It's like when you see like the ads for the Spider-Verse movie coming out, or you even think about Spider-Man Homecoming, this feels like a movie. It's not jerky, but when you get the web slinging down and you can, you know, really get your inertia going, man, it is dizzying. And I like the story so far. And this is one of those games that can go on and on. I think they just put out a new episode, you know, so it can almost be like a movie series, you know, or kind of like your TV binging where you got another Spider-Man episode. So I see a good future for that game. Another game that just got bigger this year was God of War.
Yes.
And if you remember the small God of War, you know, the little Kratos fighting, it ain't little anymore. I mean, it's like a full-sized movie type game where you've got a big Kratos fighting big, you know, actual reactive, you know, enemies. And I think that'll be up there on a lot of game of the year lists.
Which is crazy too, because that franchise has always been about scale. And I still remember the third God of War where you fought on a Titan, and the Titan basically, you know, if you've played that game, you remember Kratos fits in basically inside the guy's hand. It's almost like he's like a seed in the guy's hand. So he's tiny. And so the whole fight is you crawling up his arm and doing all this stuff. I mean, and then, you know, that's what made that series great. I'm bummed. I haven't tried the new one out yet, but everything I've seen has been phenomenal. It looks really good. I was nervous about the new perspective they tried, which was kind of over the shoulder, but it seems like it's still really awesome. And also, I want to see him as a dad, which is kind of
Yeah,
wild.
You'd enjoy that. I mean, I've played a couple hours of it just to kind of get a feel for it to make sure, you know, I don't know. It just felt like something I wanted to do. So it's a great year for games. I mean, I know there's some missteps along the way, but I think it's a good time to be a gamer right now. And if you haven't played for a while, you know, it's a good time to hop back in. There's lots of ways to do it.
Yeah. All right, listeners, it's your turn. We want to hear from you. What video games have you played so far this year? What do you like? What don't you like? Are there any games that you haven't tried yet that you're really looking forward to? Hit us up on Twitter. You can find us at Mothership Pod. You can also tweet at us individually. I'm at Brett Molina 23. Mike, what are you at?
I'm at Mike Snyder.
There we go.
S-N-I-D-E-R.
And don't forget, you can email us too. We're at mothershippod@usatoday.com. So that'll do it this week. Thanks so much for listening. Special thanks to our pilot/producers of The Mothership, Shannon Green and Natalie Boyd. If you like the podcast and don't want to miss an episode moving forward, you can subscribe to The Mothership for free on Apple Podcasts. While you're there, leave us a rating and review because it helps other folks find the podcast. And we seriously love your feedback. It's greatly appreciated. Please, more please. If Apple Podcasts isn't your jam, you can also find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, you will find us. That'll do it. Until next Friday, nerds out.